I'm so excited this week to introduce you to Una Rourke, and I'm going to have to read what her job title is because it's quite a mouthful. So she is the Director of Business Partnering and Change UK and Change for UK and Ireland. And she has been with 3Ireland, I think it says on LinkedIn, for approximately 14 years. And I had spoken to Una and I really loved her insights on her career trajectory and the lessons she's learned, and I thought that she would be an ideal person for the podcast. So Una, welcome.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Siobhan. Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you. Is this your first podcast?
It actually is, yeah, in this format. Like, I've done other sessions in person, but this is the first format of a podcast for me. Yeah, so yeah. Be nice.
No, I'm like Piers Morgan. I'm going to grill you. For those of you who are listening in, just before we started recording, we were talking about, Una was asking me what I had done over Christmas and how was it. And I said that my mum had been sick and she'd gone to A&E and everything. I think it was Christmas night. And you know, when you're just, it was so busy. And I don't know if you felt this, that it was so busy, like everything's picked up so much at the end of 2022. That we went like hell for leather into Christmas. And now January was the quickest January I've ever experienced. Did you find that?
Yeah, I think January was really fast start into a new year. Sometimes, you know, it can be middle of January and you're only getting going. But actually, yeah, no, very much similar. I also think we all enjoyed Christmas where we could, probably more than we had before. So that helped. But yeah, definitely a very fast start into 2023.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. But back to this mouthful of a job title that you have. So Director of Business Partnering and Change UK and Ireland. Tell people who are listening what that is.
Yeah, and actually I realise you're missing one part actually. So to make it an even bigger mouthful that I mustn't have put on a profile. It's business partnering, change, which is organisational change and implementation and engagement actually sits within my remit. So business partnering is all things HR. So anything from a people perspective, and it's partnering with the business in a way that you're looking after people from a commercial perspective as well as a people perspective. It's probably the best way I can summarize it. Organizational change is exactly what it says. It's times when we need to change roles, change people into roles, move things around, and the implementation of that, and to ensure that people-centric and positive people experience through that type of cycle, which can sometimes be quite challenging for people. And then engagement, which I must add it onto the title, is a huge part of my role. A role I'm probably a part of it I'm very passionate about is employee engagement. So exactly how engaged are employees, how connected are they with us as an organization, as a people? What are we doing well? What are we not doing well? What do we need to improve on? So that's the remit.
And you do that for all the UK and all of Ireland.
Yeah. With a wonderful team of people is what I would say across two countries.
I was actually going to mention that to you because I've done a lot of podcasts and, you know, a lot of them are going to be coming out. And I go through the LinkedIn profiles and yours is the first one. I think it's in the headline or the bio where it's actually not about you. It's about the team that you work with. Let me try and find it here. So you say... working with a fabulous team that know our people are the most critical driving force behind our success. What made you use that as your headline? Because normally it's a description of yourself.
I think it's not really about me. Like, that's the way I look. I'm very privileged and very lucky to be doing a job I really enjoy, but I couldn't do it on my own. As much as I want to, I couldn't do it on my own. So it's through people, with their brains, their ideas, we're able to make a difference. So I would never take accountability and credit for work that isn't mine. It's very much a unit of team, both in our own people team and wider than us, that enable everything that we do. So it would be, I think, yeah, maybe that shows I don't have maybe a huge ego, which is a positive maybe. But yeah, it's without that team.
It's definitely, you know? It's a huge thing, especially I think for a leader. Because I'd heard Simon Sinek saying something similar to that a real leader works for their people. It's like, what can I do for you? How can I facilitate you to do the job that you need to do? Would you agree with that?
Absolutely agree with that. I think he talks about it, Patrick Lencioni talks about it. It's not really supposed to be fulfilling you. It's not really about you. It's about what you can do for others to make them achieve their potential. So it's a very different view maybe I have on leadership.
No, it is. And I think as well, because I was speaking to a gentleman, Michael, and his podcast is coming out next week, and he's like a chief people officer in Florida. And he was saying a similar thing, but he was saying sometimes it's hard to gauge if people in HR are good, because it's not like with a sales director that you can look at the numbers. And sometimes, you know, not just with HR directors, but sometimes they can hide behind the team of people that they have. Whereas I think from what you're saying, that you operate very much from a growth mindset, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think none of us are the finished article. And I think it's having the mindset, I suppose, to appreciate that you're at your best when you're really uncomfortable. And throughout my career, I've had moments where I've felt really uncomfortable, but they're the moments where I'm growing the most, where I'm gaining the most as an individual. But equally, having that openness, I think, and being open to other ideas, like, we don't have all the answers. And if there's any leader out there saying they do, they really don't. The answers actually come from allowing the opportunity for others to feed in, to give the ideas, and for the multiple brains to work, you know? So that would be my view anyway, Siobhan, on it.
No, I think that you're completely correct. I think it's so interesting, because then when you add it in the engagement, that's how you're getting the engagement, because it sounds to me, and I don't know if you're doing this with intention, I presume that you are, but like, you're creating like an environment of like psychological safety, so people can contribute ideas, you know, if something works, great, if it doesn't, take the lesson and move on. Would you find that?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's moments I would say within my career of managing different people that, albeit it can be a little bit challenging as a leader when you've got somebody who has a very different thought process or very different perception of something or way of looking at something. And that can be difficult. There can actually be a bit of tension in that if somebody isn't seeing things the same way as you do. But then there can be that moment when they offer something that's so profound that you're like, oh my God, you never thought about it that way. And it can change the whole cycle of the direction of a project or an idea or an initiative. And it's those moments, I've had a few of them on my career with people I remember in my head, not just necessarily want to throw their names out here. Yeah, there was a bit of tension at the beginning. And then you're like, wow, that's what a team of different people with different thinking and different brains can bring. Because the end result, and you know, this has been proven over and over from a science perspective, from a diversity perspective, that you get the best optimum result from being able to work with that group and get the best of it. Albeit that there is, I will be honest to say, there can always be that little bit of tension when there's those diverging kind of thoughts, you know, in the room. But the end result can just blow your mind, you know.
I think that's a really interesting take on diversity, because I'd be a big proponent of diversity, equity and inclusion. I think that it just gives you, like, if you use an analogy of a castle and turrets, you know, if you have everybody the same, you just have one turret covered. But if you have, like, you know, diverse age, neurodiversity, all of those different things, any type of diversity, you can see, like, you have a full 360 view. But it's the first time that I've heard somebody in a position similar to yours admit that, you know, diversity, equity and inclusion maybe isn't as easy as it sounds. It's not just about, you know, like, that there is something that you have to work with it. Do you want to chat a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think first of all, I think it's a huge agenda for most organizations. It's probably a strategic pillar for a lot of organizations at the moment. The science is behind it, but we talk less about the challenges that come with it. And, you know, even whether, and to be honest with you, back in 2018, 2019, I think it was, in three of the organization I belong to, we looked at diversity for the first time, and we went very narrow with it. I often remember, it's one of my biggest learnings from a career perspective. we were building a strategy and we just went quite narrow in our thinking. And then through external insight and meeting with other organizations who were further down the track than we got the insight to say, my God, diversity is so broad. It's so complex that we had to take a step back. We had to kind of say to the board, I know we showed you where we were thinking we're going, but actually we have to pause. We have to go back and actually relook at how we were looking at it. We were going too narrow into gender and, very specific when actually diversity is huge. Like it's huge. There's so
Yeah, it's
many
so
different
big.
facets of it. And, I remember we had a fantastic consultant who spoke to us about an onion. There's just so many layers of diversity that people come with. And I think we probably underestimate some of the complexity around it. So, neurodiversity is probably what I was talking about there, that bringing that different th thoughts into the room and creating the right environment that people feel comfortable to share and offer their thoughts. And equally, if you've got people who don't want to offer it in the room with 20 people, how are you giving them the opportunity in a different way that they can share without looking, or feeling that they're not being their authentic selves? They don't feel comfortable taking center stage. They'd rather share their ideas differently. So I think it's the challenge that comes with us. And I would say no company has mastered it, Siobhan. I'd say we're all still learning and we're all still managing through it. But there's huge opportunity in at least having a broad education around understanding difference and the benefit that can come from difference. And I think that's a start. That's always the start for me from a diversity perspective, whether that's gender or culture, ethnicity, whatever it may be, whichever form it may be. But I do admit that maybe that's me just sharing that own my own personal experience, that I remember feeling that tension in the room, going, oh my God, they're going off on like the totally wrong direction. But actually, when they came back in their own accord and offered us something incredible in the room,
Yeah, and I think it's just given people the generosity and the space to, I always say, like, land that plane, because like maybe when they're getting to the thought, it's like they take a different path, or they're getting to the solution, they take a different path, but they get there nonetheless. I also think in relation to what you said about companies, I think it's really like diversity, equity and inclusion, it's an evolution and it's growing and they're saying, so I would have been very like a huge ally of the LGBTQ community, and there's still stuff that I'm learning or misspeaking
Oh, yeah.
on. So I do think intentionality is good. And the fact, like as you said, that you learned, like one of the biggest lessons that you learned, like some people could look at that as a failure, or the project, initially failed or the proposal failed. But what to me, what it would be is that you're out of your comfort zone, and like what you had mentioned earlier, you touched on, that's where the biggest learnings are. And then when it's like that Maya Angelou quote, when you know better, you do better. And once you've got the information that, okay, it was too narrow, you rejigged it, which is a really good sign as a company, I think. There's no need to be canceling yourself for making an error if the intention is good.
And I think that was the moment maybe where it was the safety and saying, we didn't get it right this time. And actually, and I think being open and being vulnerable, Siobhan, and saying, yes, we've done our research, yes, we've looked at all of the different, but we didn't reach out to enough external organizations to get some of the insight. And that was the learning for us. And interestingly, from then on, from project after project after that, if we were doing something new, we were very comfortable to reach out then to networks. We got used to that, because we don't have all the answers. We'd love to say
No.
we do, but we don't. And there's other organizations and other HR professionals who can share their learnings and say, don't go down that avenue because we did that and that didn't work. So there's our learning, and just saves actually people a lot of time. And I think the HR community now is much more open and much more open to sharing than I remember earlier on in my career, where everyone kept their ideas quite closed because they didn't want to give you the secret sauce. Like it was a very different dynamic. And actually, I love the way it's gone, where you can reach out to somebody through LinkedIn and say, we're doing something, I see you do X, would you be interested in meeting for a
Yeah, I
coffee
love that
and
as well.
sharing,
I
you
think
know?
what's changed though is because it used to be from what I remember is it used to be business, against business, and it's like, well, we need to be the best. And then I think people have, well, I hope they have evolved into realizing that like success or it isn't finite. Like there's not just like this amount of success in a cup, and if you're successful or if you do something well, then it takes away from my successes. I also think that especially with recruitment. Recruitment consultants. There were so many like I work kind of in a standalone role now, but in my previous company, God, there was hundreds of recruiters, and they used to make me better. So I would sometimes listen to some of them on the phone, and I'd like, oh, the way they said that, or a turn of phrase, or how natural they sounded, and how or supportive to candidates, and you take, excuse me, you take the best bits of each of them, and something that you can kind of, and hopefully like they would have learned from me. So I do think that in a community of yeah, they're not your competition, they're your squad more so,
Absolutely. Yeah,
and they help
absolutely.
make your job easier. I wanted to ask you, the last a podcast has just been released, and I was chatting to a lady, and she's I think she's the head of recruitment for Time Out UK, Caitlin. And on her LinkedIn again, or her career trajectory, she's done short roles. Okay, so like it's been like maybe from a year to a year and 9 months. I think like maybe the longest time she spent was like 3 years in a role. And then so that's I used her as an example on the podcast to say that like if you do need to leave or if you don't align with the values of a company, it no longer has to be you have to stay there for 6 years for your CV. You can make a change, and that perspective is kind of changing. But you, how long have you been in your current role? Well, not your current role. How long have you been with your current company? Let me rephrase that.
Yeah, 14 years, 14 years with three. But never imagined I was going to be 14 years in three. And like, I think there's times, like, if I'm being really honest, Siobhan, there's times over the last maybe 5 years I would be like, oh, you know, am I a life, you know, am I a lifer? And should I not be experiencing different organizations and different ways of working? But I've actually come around now, actually. So they were those little seeds of
Yeah, of
doubt where I kind
course.
of had those niggles. But I met a woman actually recently, and she was 26 years in her company. And I was like, well, I thought like I was, you know, I thought I was a dinosaur, but actually, you know, and I said, how is that? And she said, it's been wonderful. And actually, when I reflect on my 14 years, A, it doesn't feel like 14 years. B, it feels like the company is not the same company I joined because we had an acquisition in the middle of it and everything. But I've just had such amazing opportunity, and I've been very lucky and taken had up the opportunity to move around and do different jobs. So it's not like I've been 14 years doing exactly the same job, which wouldn't suit my personality. It might suit other people to other people might get a kick out of doing that and be very happy and content doing that. I personally wouldn't be. So it has been a very interesting career, and I feel very lucky actually to have joined, because I joined three on a 3 month contract. I
Did
didn't
you?
join on a permanent job.
How did you get it? Did you apply directly or did you go through an agency?
I went through an agency at the time, but this was I. So, little bit of background. Hope you don't mind. I was. I'm a. I'm a. I've got recruitment in my core, so I would have started off life way back in the day in retail. I always think retail is a brilliant job to do when you're young, because it
Fab,
gives you
yeah.
that wonderful foundation of customers and service and all of that. I'd love my own kids to definitely do a stint in retail or hospitality or something like that when they get a bit older. But then I fell rolled into recruitment by total accident. Was I've yet to meet a recruiter that has
I
chosen
was
it as a
literally
job.
just going to say that everybody did it.
Fell into it, and fell into it based maybe on my personality. I did an endurance job before it, okay? I did what I call an endurance job, which was in banking, commercial banking. I worked nights, and I worked with two people and a computer. And I say it's an endurance job, but it taught me a huge amount. I did it for 11 months, and after all that did was say, okay, Una, you're not going to work in banking potentially And also, you need to work with people, and you need to work in an off in a place that has a bit of a buzz about it, or that, you know, there's a little bit of
Yeah,
energy in the
like you're
room.
losing the will to live. I worked in a bank as well.
So
Just not for me.
endurance jobs are good because they're the ones that go, actually, this is not for you, but actually what you do need now is X, Y, and Z. And that was recruitment for me then, was my next stint. And it gave me so much of what I wanted. The interaction with people, the variety of people that you met through recruitment was just amazing. The amount you learnt, like different jobs. I remember doing fund management for the first time. I was like, what is that? You know, what is that job? What do they do? And I got a huge energy from it, you know. But they were the endurance jobs you do along the way. I had two of them in my career, and the second one was an agency, because I was in a lovely boutique agency, which was a good fit. Small, it wasn't really competitive, actually, Siobhan. You know, it was everyone in it together, and you were trying to find the absolute best person for a very small client list that we worked with. So it was really that wonderful magic jigsaw, perfect person into the right job. And that's what I saw recruitment as, and that's what I loved about it. And when I went into a larger agency, because again, you're young and you're like, oh, I want a bit more buzz and a bigger place and all the rest of it, and probably wanted a few more quid, if I'm being honest too. And went into a larger agency, and then the dynamic just shifted for me. And this was my second endurance job. I always look at it, and I hated it, because it was like, how many CVs are you sending out? And I hope agencies have shifted from this mentality, but
Not
this is
all of them, no.
back a good few years ago. And I remember saying to somebody, but like, I don't really rate that guy that I just saw now. And do I have to send his CV on to somebody,
Yeah,
because
mortified.
yeah, that's my name against him saying he's great. So, or she or whoever. But in the end, it just didn't fit with me, kind of from an integrity and ethics kind of perspective. And I needed to get out, but I was living on my own, and I had a rent to pay and all the rest of it. But I took a chance, and it was through an agency. They said, look, they've got a 3-month opportunity. Back then, internal recruitment or in-house recruitment was really hard to move from agency, because they had you boxed in agency, and it was really difficult. But I just took the chance, and I was like, surely I have a friend who has a couch or something if I run into trouble after 3
What's the
months, you
worst
know.
that can happen?
But best decision of my life. Like, best decision of my life so far.
Do you know what I think is really interesting there, though? But that's you backing yourself, because I do know like that some large agencies, not all, but like they can. I know, not so much in my experience, but I've heard from other people that like they felt like battery hens, you know, where it was just like that you're all in there, and it's just like, and especially now, I have business partners who recruit recruiters, and because like the market is tightening in the UK and things like that, it's like their automatic reaction is to up the KPIs, you know, and make 50 business development calls a day. And that never used to sit well with me, because I was like, I want to be a partner to the company that I'm working with. I don't want to torment them. Like, I don't want them to see my name on their phone going, Jesus,
Here's your
she's
one.
ringing me again. Yeah, she must have had a bad month. But more importantly, I think something that people can learn from with what you just said is that, like, if you're in the position to, because it is like if you have kids and a mortgage, it's different. But if you have a position to, it's really good to like back yourself, you know. And I think short-term contracts, a lot of people don't realize that, like, our temping contracts are great, because I always do this thing like with candidates, you know, if you're career mapping, like where you want to get to, you know, you could take a short-term contract to get you, say, if you wanted to get into pharma admin and you're in, I don't know, media, you could take a contract in a pharma administration role, and then then you start to work your way up. But it's insane that you did the 3-month contract. What was your first role?
It was like a recruiter, like just a straightforward recruiter in the office. It was C3 was at in startup m mode back then, but they were probably quite reluctant to hire perm roles, just given it was kind of at that very early stage. So I just went in and recruited head office like roles. I had about like 30 roles. I look back and it was hilarious. I arrived, like there was no phone, there's no desk. Like, it's funny to think back to how far we've come now, but it was an experience that I have to say, I probably went in, yes, I backed myself, but I was going to give that every shot of working. Like, after a week or two, I loved the dynamic, I loved the people, I loved what I saw I could potentially do. And I'd say after 2 months, I was like, this, I'm making this work, you know. I would say I had that view on it.
It's fun though, because it's like when you go from your endurance job, and it's like, it's why, like, this is the hill I'm going to die on in relation to culture, that if something isn't a fit for you, you'll know it straight away, you know, like you genuinely do feel it in your, and because you're spending 40 hours a week somewhere. Actually, I'll share this with you. I have a video coming out for LinkedIn, but I was talking to my uncle the other day. So he owns and I hate that I'm giving him a compliment because I'll never live it down, but he owns a garage. He's been in the motor trade for years and years, like since he was 14. I think he's almost like 60, and his business has grown exponentially. So we decided to have now monthly meetings, right? So because there's so many different areas of the business that they connect, and I'd given him like an idea of agenda. And I mean, like, nobody likes team meetings. I mean, like, I used to think every Tuesday I was going to call sick for my team meeting because it was like, what have you got, blah blah blah, you know. It was like shining a torch in your face. So I was like, make it inclusive, you know, and comfortable, and you know that it's their meeting and all of this. So he had done all that, like, and he kind of knew it himself, but he just wanted to make sure he was on the right road. And I called him afterwards and I was like, how was it? And he was like, oh, it's good. So he gave me these tidbits, and then he said, and then I just closed the meeting by saying, you know, this isn't your real life. This is your real life is with your loved ones and your family and this and that. And he said, but you come in here, you know, to get a paycheck to facilitate that, the life that you live with the real people. He was like, so let's make it as enjoyable as possible. And I just thought, I have never heard that in a meeting. And this is from someone who doesn't have like HR training, doesn't, but he's just lived a life. And he even realizes, him as a business owner, that this is, it's great to love your job, but it's just a job, you know, and let's make it as easy on each other when we're in here. What would your thoughts be on that?
Yeah, like I think, well, first of all, that's like I think it's great if you can approach things. Like what I would say is that's authentic, isn't it? That's authentic leadership that he went in and he portrayed the scenario as he saw the scenario for people. I think absolutely agree with aspects of that. I think everybody's different is what I would say. So I think it's constantly reminding people's motivations are all a little bit different, and you have to potentially bear that in mind. But I think we are there every week. We spend more time in the work environment than I do with my own kids and my family and everything.
So
I
true.
have to be enjoying it. Like I like and many of my team, we often talk about that. Like we're in here and we're giving it our all, but are you doing the things that light you up? Are you doing the things that you get a buzz off? Are you doing things that bring you joy? Because if you're not, either we'll try and, you know, curate something to make sure aspects of what you're doing give you that. Otherwise, I suppose this maybe isn't the right place for you, you know? The just in there to do the job, I get that, Siobhan, but I'm lucky enough to say I probably don't necessarily have a team of people that see their roles like
Yeah.
that.
Well, I think he meant more, maybe like I misspoke. I think he meant more that like we can come in, let's, you know, enjoy it. Let's make it as, you know, that we're getting out of it what we put into it. That, like, you know, at the end of the week you have a sense of, you know, I've achieved something. But you had touched on something there about if you're not, because there's always going to be certain parts of your job that you don't like, right? Like admin, it's for me. Like, so that's like grand. I can grin and bear it because it's like maybe 10% of my, probably should be 20%, but I'd say it's a good 10. But I'm a big believer, and I'd like your thoughts on this, of job crafting. So when I went into my previous company, I went in as a recruiter, temp recruiter, and I didn't really like, I loved the making money and things like that, but I wanted more. So the company facilitated me to like craft my job in the sense of to take on other duties. So whether it was the sports and social, or working with students with intellectual disabilities, or, you know, doing more work with like organizations like JobCare or Epic. So my job, even though I was paid for the recruitment side of it, it fulfilled every aspect of my personality. I could pay my rent and give back and find people jobs. Do you believe that organizations are moving more towards that, where they can, once you learn the basics of the role, that you can try and implement other other kind of duties into your position?
I think trying to think about that one actually, I would say organizations are like, I wouldn't say, I'm not sure it's the majority of organizations that can probably lean into that. I think some maybe more naturally can lean in than others. I think in a lot of organizations, there's lots of opportunity. I think what is interesting that you're saying the organization crafted, I would say you sought the opportunity too. So there's always
Yeah,
individuals
fair.
that want a little bit more than what they have. And if you approach anybody and they, with that mindset of saying, I just noticed that over there, and I think I'd be able to do that quite
Yeah,
well.
no, I would have been very
Yeah.
much like that. Yeah.
So
But
I
it's
think
putting your hand up to
yeah.
say it and, like coming up with an idea or a suggestion or,
Like most organizations, I think, are quite agile like that,
Yeah.
Siobhan, and actually would love people to be saying, I have a bit more capacity. I see that there's an opportunity there. I think within, and I can only speak because of my 14 years, I can speak very fluidly about three. We've lots of opportunities for individuals to do their job and get involved in other aspects, and I think whether that's, the employee forum, whether that's, involved in some of the chat, engagement champion work that happens across the organization, some of the CSR work, there's lots of opportunity in an organization that I'm in for you to get involved in other aspects. For it to be formed as part of your job, we probably haven't got there yet. But a
Yeah.
good
I think
manager,
that's very specific though, isn't it? It's like,
a good manager will be asking you all the time, so how are you feeling? Is there anything else you'd like to get involved in? And it is a little bit of that, and
yeah.
that's interesting what you said, because I would have said when I first started in that 3 months, I remember looking at how somebody was doing, and no, it's no disrespect to the person who was doing it, they were just too busy. I was saying, oh, like, I know I'm in to do the office recruitment, but I'd really like to have a go at the retail stuff as well, because I think I could make that a better process, so
Yeah.
it's a little bit like if the
It's putting your hand up.
conversation, if the conversation is open enough. And I think, like, most managers would bite your hand off, no,
Yeah,
if you're
I think
from.
so. I think, but I mean, again, I've said that, like, even in some of the webinars that I've done, that, like, people get in their own way. Like, self-doubt is probably the biggest killer of dreams or development or goals because they're like, oh, well, they might say this. And I know my grandmother used to say, closed mouth won't get fed. So it's more about just making the suggestion. And using your, I mean, like, I would think using your one-to-ones. I mean, like, even for me, like, in my one-to-ones, I used to do it with the director of the team. So, like, they didn't really make that decision. It was more aligning with HR and what projects that they had and where I could, fit in and,
And add value
offer my,
there, yeah.
yeah, and offer my skill set. But yeah, I think it's interesting that you said that it's more about, like, approaching and seeing what the bigger
Yeah.
companies have to offer.
And it's interesting, we did a panel piece a while ago as leaders, and that's what I said. I would say ask for more. If you want more, ask for more,
Yeah. And what is that in relation to when you were saying that you're doing the panel of leadership? Is that in relation to asking for more not work but more interesting projects? Is that, asking for promotions? Is that asking for money?
No, so I probably wouldn't. I think you can learn a lot through breath rather than just this quite narrow move. I know people are motivated by different things, but I found, well, in my own career, I loved the breath. I loved learning more in a particular area, having the opportunity to expand rather than focusing primarily on the next step up that very
Yeah, same.
horizontal kind of career ladder. This panel was just, I suppose, we were meeting with a group in the business, and it was just three of us from the people team. It was more introducing ourselves, but it was one of the questions that was asked, if you've any advice for anybody here. And one of the girls, she said, make sure you're passionate about what you're doing. And then I was like, ask for more. Like, if you want more, ask for it,
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what our other colleague said. I think he was just saying, enjoy what you're doing, so similar to the passion piece. But they were the tips that we were giving, actually, just a group of people, just from our own perspective
Yeah,
of what we
no,
thought
I think that I'm
important.
like, it's such good advice though, and it's so simple because I think people get like paralysis by analysis about like how they'll enjoy their work more, how they'll get to the next stage of their career, whatever that looks like for them personally. But it is those simple things. It's like going into something like with a positive attitude, you know, joy, solution driven. Like I've worked with some people who have a problem for every solution. You know, like if you look at some, because things go wrong every day, you know this, especially in recruitment. I mean, when you place somebody or you get an offer, I had an offer for someone recently and they got counter offered, and it's like people have free will. You know, if you don't like it, then I should have gone and sold cars. So you have to just like do control the controllables and then, you know, and move on. But I do think that that's like a really good piece of advice for people to like to go into it like the whole of their heart, and it will be reciprocated generally.
I think generally, I would absolutely think so. Absolutely. I think that all just comes down to good conversation, good conversations, Siobhan,
Yeah.
you know, where somebody feels that they can share, I'm loving this part of my job. That bit isn't great, but I'm going to keep going because I know that's part of the job. But I'd love to do a little bit of that. Or it's just to make sure that, and it's, you know, I think individuals will need to drive some of that conversation if they haven't got a manager or a leader who's asking those questions, you know.
Yeah. You know, I was speaking to a group of EAs. I work with the Zoom PA event, and they were that's one of the jobs that it, their success is totally dependent on the relationship that they have with their executive. So if their executive knows how to use their skill set, or you know, like if they're not a great communicator, you know, if they don't have certain things, it's the EA, and I'm like, these are senior EAs, like maybe like 70, 80, 90K, you know, they're stunted in their growth. And I had said to them that, you know, you need to go and let people know, because they don't not just share what they do. They're very much like you, but they're not in leadership roles. So they share what the team has achieved or the executive has achieved, but they never say what they've done, you know. So I'm like, you can put your hand up for other projects, you know, or to get to know people. Because I don't want them to think it's networking in the sense of like it's staged or I'm only talking to you because I want, but you can like learn from the benefit of other people's experience. And one of them had said that they had never, I think she had a 25-year career, but she'd never had a mentor. Do you think it's important for people to have mentors?
Oh, I think it can be huge. And whether it's a formal piece or an informal piece, whether you let the person know that they're your mentor or you don't, I think it's huge. I think people can get huge advantage, I think, out of that. And I think, you know, the broader the better. And even if and they might change Siobhan. You might have a mentor for a certain part of your career, and actually, you know, you seek somebody else then if you're trying to do something slightly different. But huge advantage in that, you know.
And
And
did you have mentors, whether they would have known that that they were mentoring you or not?
I'd say I had the more informal ones that they
Yeah.
didn't know the role that they were playing. But I think I've always, you know, first of all, you know, I'm always open to say I don't have the answers. So, you know, absolutely, I'd have no problem. I've got some really a lovely network of people that you could tap into and just say, thinking of doing this, thoughts, you know. Views, anything, you know. So yeah, but as I say, they probably didn't know the role that they were playing for me at
Yeah.
the time, you know.
No, I think yeah, I'd be the same. I don't have like official mentors, but yeah, there's loads of people. And I mean, like, it is at stages, it's like seasons, you know. So it's people that like I would pick things up from. But we've covered a lot about like your work and your learnings, and you've been like so like open. So I really appreciate it in relation to your challenges and like the learning curve. But when we had spoken last, I'm like, obviously we've come out of COVID, and it's, you know, I touch wood. Everything seems to be kind of getting back on track. I don't think we've really understood exactly what we've been through. So I think everybody's still processing that a little bit. But how is that for you then, going home? Like you were fully remote, I suppose, like everybody else.
Absolutely.
And you've children.
I have three children. COVID, like I probably have a little bit of PTSD, if I'm being really honest around COVID. I think it was a really 2020 was a very challenging year when I look back at it. I had just taken on that new role across the UK. I was trying to build a team across the country, the two countries. I was trying to understand a new business and how they were set up. So from a work perspective, it was challenging. I also was doing an executive coaching diploma just for the thrown in. It was like this perfect storm, you know. And then I have three small kids, and like back then I forget because they were like 7, 5, and 2, and like I think maybe, and maybe to explain my situation, I do have three children. And actually, because I've been in three for 14 years, I had all of my children during my career in that in three. But when my eldest was about 5, so that's about 5 years ago now, we were trying to, my husband also worked. He worked on the road. I had a busy job, worked, you know, I'm not saying I worked extensively long hours, but it was a challenge. The childcare thing was a challenge, you know, the drop-offs, the pickups, all of that kind of stuff. And that sat with me because he was always on the road. So when our eldest was turning 5 and starting to school, to go to school, it threw up this whole logistical kind of challenge. Like, how are we gonna do it? Like, how am I gonna pick up him at that weird time, get into work? And this was pre-COVID, so we've gained a lot more flexibility and everything since COVID. So we were 5 days in the office. That was our ethos back then. So it was very, I was just like, I don't know how we're going to do it. And then the money, and when you've three children, and you know they were all very much wanted children, no major surprises. But I think we knew that the cost implication of having three small kids was going to be quite significant. And then it really becomes significant when you've got three, you know, in childcare of some kind, and we know how expensive all the creches and all of that is. But the school thing was a catalyst for us. How are we going to do it? How are we going to manage it? Two in a creche and the school runs and all of that. And how are we going to employ somebody? And we're going to have two people. Like, we just, our heads were just melted thinking about it. And at that point, my husband turned to me and he's like, not really enjoying my job like as much as you enjoy your job. And I said, okay. And he said, well, like, well, I said, would you ever think maybe could you stay at home with the kids? And it was a big decision. I'm making it sound like it was a conversation over coffee. It was a really big decision for us. But we went with it. It was made easier when one person isn't enjoying their particular role or isn't getting that level of satisfaction or doesn't have that passion about what they're doing. It made it a little bit easier. And we said, well, look, we'll try it. We'll try it. And I always remember the term he used, and I've said this to many people over the years. He turned and he said, it would be a privilege to look after the three children. And
That just gave me goosebumps.
I know, and that gave me goosebumps when he said it. And I'm not sure, and I love my kids, Siobhan, but I'm not sure I would have said that. I used to love my maternity leaves, but I also enjoyed going back to work and being able to have lunch and go to the loo and all the things you couldn't do when you were on maternity leave, and you know, have warm coffees and hot coffees after it. So when he said that, I said, okay, this is worth us trying. And
100%.
this
And if
is,
he's
yeah.
saying that and using that language, like that comes right from your heart. I think that's why I got the goosebumps. Like, then he's the right person to be at home. And I think it's really good. I hate to say brave that you're saying that you enjoyed going back to work, because a lot of like that's just guilt, you know, it's like societal guilt that, you know, why do you not want to stay home with your kids? But I think it's like, yeah, it's finding what worked for you as a family. And then
Correct.
was that, how far pre-COVID was that? Was that like 2 years?
That's 2 years pre-COVID. Yeah, that was 2 years pre-COVID. So I think what I would say is it's a big decision to make, you know, and not every family can make that decision either. And I know that. And you know, going down to single income comes with its pressures and comes with its challenges. And not every family can say we couldn't move to one income, even with the, but sometimes those creche fees and the after school costs, if you do the maths, like
It's one salary.
you're just paying for the childcare with one salary. That's all. And that's when we did a bit of the maths and we had the conversation about it. But I will say, Siobhan, we check in. And we checked in a lot over those 2 years to say, is it still working? And that is still a constant conversation that happens between myself and my husband. Is it working? And during COVID, he was tested to the absolute brink, like every parent across the country. And yes, we were very lucky because I saw many scenarios, as I'm sure you did, where you two parents working and trying to work and kids and homeschooling and all of the drama that I think we all had to manage and how we survived it. I some of it I just
It's
don't
actually
know.
shocking, isn't
Yeah. But and I was lucky. I was one of the lucky ones because actually that was his job, you know, to look after the kids. But he had a toddler, he had two kids in early stage school, a toddler who doesn't get that you're doing homework and you have to concentrate. And
Absolutely
if
couldn't care less.
no. And if you remember, one day they were all in school, next day, and then you were next of all, you were a teacher and a parent. Like
Shocking.
it was just a nightmare.
I
And I
know.
couldn't help him because I was
You were
too, there was
working.
too much going on from
Yeah.
a work perspective. We were making sure our employees were okay. We were making sure our employees felt connected. We were like every organization flipping to fully remote from fully office. It was a bananas time. And it was a pressure cooker. Like I look back in 2020 and doing assignments and like when I look back, I don't know how I did it. Like
I don't think that people would have gotten through it. I mean, again, this is with a lot of things. Like if you knew how long it was going to go on, because everything was gradual, you know, it was like, okay, well, that's for 2 weeks, and then it's like 5K or 2.5K. Or I mean, I had memories on my phone of when I live in town, and that was hard for me because I was isolating. I was going through something with my previous company, and but I was isolating. My mom was cocooning, so you're just alone. I was the opposite end of the spectrum. I had nothing to occupy myself. So all I had was anxiety. I think it was like 2.5 stone. So I went like from a size, I'd already lost weight, got to, you know, your goal weight, and then lost 2.5 stone. Like I was just eyeballs and teeth. And had to then like start, but then COVID, as it, I suppose, went on a little bit for me, it became a blessing. Which a lot of people can't say, you know, and I feel very guilty saying that, but it was just then that it gave me time. Everything, like the world just slowed down. So I could kind of catch up on myself, you know, put the, there was no bars open, so I couldn't, you know, medicate going for pints. And, you know, I had to just like face everything that I was facing head on, which was, yeah, so it's completely different to what the challenges you would have had, but it was just like so much time on my hands.
Which no, I was so far polar to that. But I do look back in hindsight, like there was great moments in the madness, and you did get a different perspective. And you know, a commute from Wicklow into town, like every day for 5 days a week, was what I used to do. And I used to think I was just tired from life, but I was tired from that commute. And those are the things you realize during COVID. It was a wonderful time for HR, Siobhan. It put a huge spotlight on us, and we shone in many organizations. Our people were well looked after. We communicated as well with them. We also had that wonderful, uncomfortable moment where, oh my God, we don't know what we're doing. We've no policy on this. We've no, like we could, we were learning, we were back learning, like with everybody at the same time. And I can look back now, like once we're through it, and see again some of the benefits of it, you know, and the opportunities to have, like that everyone had to hang out with their kids a bit more to, you know, to just
Yeah, to
appreciate life a bit
recalibrate, I
more.
think, wasn't it? And it really, well, for me, it was like the things that I missed. It wasn't shopping or things like that. I missed like hugs off my goddaughter Grace, you know, or like seeing Lucy and bringing her to the cinema, or you know, like going up to my mom and being able to like give her a kiss on the forehead when I'm making her a cup of tea. Like it was those things that. So then, and that was one thing actually bringing us full circle back to Christmas. This Christmas, now that you've said it, was actually better than I've actually given it credit for, because it was the first year. We have like all these traditions. Like my mom's one of 10, so you can imagine like the cousins and like, and we're very, very close. We go on holidays together every year. So it's like this year is the first year that we'll all be going back together. Christmas we got to go to Harold's Cross, you know, the lighting of the Christmas tree,
Oh,
because that had been
lovely.
cancelled. We do that as a family, go for breakfast Christmas Eve morning together. So all of those things came back this year. So yeah, thanks for reminding me of that actually. I'm grateful for it. Yeah. So in hindsight, when you were saying there that you were grateful for some of the things that had, well, for the moments that you had during COVID, what positive changes have you taken into your current life? And that can be professionally or personally.
I think some of the personal pieces is just, you know, well, professionally we moved to hybrid, which I think has personally been a game changer for many of us who, but for anybody that commutes into the office, even if you're only on a bike for 15 minutes, do you know, whatever that looks like to you, I think that was a game changer. I think kind of post-COVID, that has given me a different ability to get more of the balance and the blend of Una the person and Una the person in work. So that definitely is what the company, from a work perspective, I've gained. I think hybrid working and working from home, never thought I could do it. I never did it. One day, I think when it snowed back in, like, I don't know, 8 years ago, and I nearly lost my life working at home for a day. So all of that, like, I think is definitely, I feel that's a gift. And that's a gift I don't ever want to give back to any company. I feel very passionate about that. And from a personal perspective, I live very close to the sea, and I was walking by the coast, like, you know, for half an hour before I started work, listening to podcasts. And I thought, this is my best life. So, you know, it's a bit dark for me to do it at the moment, so winter isn't brilliant, but like when it starts brightening up now, I'll be back doing that. And they're the moments for me. And COVID indirectly, I think, provided me those moments and the ongoing gift of them, you know. And I think that's what I, you know, and I think we just had it, like, a little what you're saying, all of those moments, those touch points, those connection points, Siobhan. I think that's why I'd say we all went a bit bananas over Christmas, and we didn't really care. Like, we all were like, well, I've had it twice now. So it was like, you know, and I'm okay and I survived. And I know lots of people are still very sick with it, and it still impacts people differently. But I mean, I think given where we came from, I mean, Christmas was about being together.
It was
And
hectic, wasn't it? It was very much the yeah. No, I definitely think so. And I do think that you're right. I do think it's those little things, and it's finding like the small, like that word extraordinary, like it's the ordinary moments that like, but once you're in them and they've been taken away from you, then when you get them back, it's like, oh, okay, so this is what it is for me.
And some of the kids stuff as well, I suppose, like, you know, some of the drop-offs to school and stuff that I wouldn't normally have ever done because I would have been well gone, you know. So some of those pieces, just from a more family
How did the
perspective.
kids react to having you home for?
Like, it's incredible how they adapt. So I thought they would be banging down my door all the time, especially the smaller one, the 2-year-old. I thought, oh, she's not gonna leave me alone if she knows that I'm here. But they get so used to that. Oh, you're gone to work. You're in the office. You know, that's what they did. So, but I think they really like the fact that they're seeing you, because they would never have seen me in the morning, Siobhan. They would only see me in the evening back kind of pre-COVID, because I would be gone actually when most of them are asleep, because that's the commute I was doing.
That's so
And
great that you have that time back,
so
isn't
now
it?
you're seeing them in the morning. You're saying, hope you have a good day, guys. Like, all of those kind of pieces.
Yeah.
They never share their appreciation for anything, because it's just their norm, you know. Now, like, they adapt very quickly, so none of them have had a deep and meaningful with me about
No, I
how
can't imagine that
I've
they will.
felt, you know. But it's good. I appreciate it, and I think it's nice to see you're seeing more of them, you know, which is, you know, it's never a bad thing.
It's never a bad thing. And before we finish, because I've like covered so much with you've been so open, so I really do appreciate it. And I think one of the things, just to bring it back to a professional level, like I'm all about, like, you know, leadership and great leadership. One of the things that I found is that vulnerability has been mentioned mostly on this podcast as like a great vulnerability and transparency, I think, in equal measures have been mentioned as like skills, or yeah, well, skills, I suppose, or traits of really positive leaders. And you've shown that, like, in buckets, like, and it's not just in your LinkedIn profile. I can tell from sitting here talking to you. And for those of you who are listening to this, like, on Spotify or just on your headphones, like, your facial expression when you're talking about your team and what you do and your learnings. Tell a whole story so they can actually watch it on YouTube if they want to. Like you just come across as this like super genuine person. But like, would you, and I think this is something for people who are listening, do you have like core values or traits that you think help you be a great leader, or what you look for in a great leader?
I probably have core, I would say I have core traits and core values. I think some, you know, and I'd say they have evolved is what I would say over time. I'm not
That was
sure
my
I would have,
next question.
I'm not sure I would have had them 10 years ago, but authenticity is a huge part for me. And I think to be comfortable in your skin, to own who you are, good, bad, and different, but not have poor behavior, obviously, within that. But that authenticity for me is a really strong core value. Honesty, straight talk, also probably very important. They're quite interlinked, I'd say. Now, not what I would say is honesty and straight talk, not to crush somebody's spirit, you know, not to the point where you've
Not radical, kind of.
not radical. But I think in a world where we're seeing, like, you know, I'm on Instagram like the rest of the world, like you're seeing a perception of a world. I think honesty and authenticity are really important for us, to kind of hear people speak in that way, to be quite straight, to be honest, to be frank. I think is very powerful in this world when we
100%.
see projection everywhere of what you should be and you should look like
Yeah.
and
Do you know that was
what
one
life
of the
should be.
reasons that this podcast actually started to do so well is when I was talking about having to get a therapist, and it was like my biggest fear to share it. This was like during COVID, to try and manage the anxious thoughts. And when I had said that, and like on the videos, it was then that people were like, oh, I had to do that too. And it gives other people permission to realize that social media is a highlight reel, first of all. Like, you know, even when you see couples posting pictures, they don't post pictures of them scrapping or fighting over like who left the milk out the night before. It's like, you know, the holiday or a sunset.
Yeah, no, it's so true.
It is so true.
So true. And then probably the last one, which I would say has evolved probably more. The other two I would say I was nearly probably born with, but the one that has probably evolved is that curiosity and that openness to other perspectives, and to keep questioning, like, and keep just keep an open mind. Like, I'm by no way near the finished article that I hope to be in 20 or 30 years, and I'm on a constant journey. And some people hate the word journey, but that constant, you know, change and learning, and the lessons are there. Like, sometimes you get them slapped in the face, Siobhan, and
Oh, I
sometimes you
know.
have to go seek them, you know.
And you
But
keep getting the lesson and you learn it.
yeah,
That will
so
keep
I
like coming
yeah.
up and smacking you in the head.
So they're probably what I would say maybe core values. As I said, I'd say two of them probably born with, had them very early on. And then that curiosity and openness one is probably that's grown, I'd say, over the last kind of maybe 5 to 10 years.
And the curiosity one is a great one for me. And the one that you said about like kind of like accepting yourself, warts and all. Because I think a lot of people who've reached out to me and like who have given me comments on the podcast, when they make a mistake, they kind of like use it as a stick to beat themselves with. So it's like I'm a firm believer that we need to give ourselves the same grace that we give other people, you know. So if you're forgiving and nice to other people, it's like take the lesson, strangle the good out of it. And then just like move on, you know, because you've got so many other mistakes or failures or things like that that are going to come up. So there's no point focusing on that one.
You know, like I think, you know, sometimes when you think of those mistakes and stuff, like, so I think it probably, I can't even remember who it was, but they said, "Well, you'll be thinking about that mistake in 5 years." And the chances are, no, you're not. You know,
I
it's not
hope
in the
not.
moment. Yeah, well, hopefully it's not that
Yeah.
big that you'll be thinking about it in 5 years. But, you know, a lot of the time, they're not like, you know, and I often remind my own team, we're not doctors. We're not on surgery tables. Do you know what I mean? We don't, you know, I know we have a huge impact on people, and we really want to look after our people, but we're not in those scenarios of
No,
life and death, you
perspective,
know?
I think, is
Yeah.
key, isn't it? And it's
You
like,
know?
as well as that, and it comes back, we can finish on this to the growth mindset. It's like, look, if something doesn't work out, like with your project, say initially when you were talking about three and, you know, launching the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, you learn the lesson and then you move on. And really, that was the win, because then
It's
after
better.
that, you reached out to all the experts in the field. So like that to me is just like, okay, well, that was like a lesson worth learning.
And an even better project and outcome in the end for everybody, you know? So that's that's the lessons you learn, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny though, because all of the things that you've said, whether it's about your personal or professional life, can actually be applied vice versa. You know, so it's like the lessons you learn professionally are equally as important to the ones that, you know, are applicable to your personal life. I've actually loved the conversation, Una. You're so good for joining us. How was the first podcast?
I think like it's lovely because it is exactly that. It is just a conversation. So
Just a chat.
it's just a chat. And I think, I just hope that some nugget of something that I said gives somebody a perspective around something they're facing,
Yeah,
But
no, it
it's
definitely
been
will.
lovely. It's been
And I'll
really
share all
lovely.
the comments. So what I'm going to do is I will put Una's LinkedIn in the comments of this when we post it out, so you can have a look at her, have a listen, and there will be a YouTube link. And yeah, thank you so much for joining us today, Una. It was enlightening.
Thanks, Siobhan. Thank you.